I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast. This is going to be episode number 268.
That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcaster. You can check him out at atfmb.com and follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I am a podcaster and a teacher and a composer and a musician. And you can check me out at johnanilio.com and follow me on Twitter at johnanilio.
And John, I want a new title, Audio okay. Jedi.
Ooh, okay. We'll work that in. I'll try to work that in. Today, we are so happy to be joined by Cassandra Rose Clark. She is the author of many books, including The Mad Scientist's Daughter, as well as Our Lady of the Ice. And she is taking part in the serial fiction, The Witch Who Came in from the Cold, along with Lindsay Smith and Ian Tregellis and Max Gladstone. So we definitely want to get into that, as well as her other books. Cassandra, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So, you know, lots of good stuff to talk about. You know, maybe you could, cause we actually had Lindsay on the show a few weeks back. Maybe you could tell us a little something about, your involvement in, The Witch Came in from the Cold.
So my agent actually just sort of emailed me one day and was like, would you be interested in doing this project? And she kind of didn't know much about it. And she basically described the premise, which is it's Cold War spy stuff with magic. And I was like, absolutely, I would like to be involved in this project. So I was really excited to kind of join Max and Ian and Lindsay and go and kind of do the whole, I'm sure Lindsay talked about it, like the whole plotting the entire season out over the course of one weekend and sort of the collaborative aspect of writing the story. So it's been a lot of fun working on it.
Now, it sounds almost like it's more akin in terms of like the sort of planning of it, more like a writer's room on a television show almost.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually what we call it. Yeah. It's like the writer's room. And I mean, everything is sort of TV terminology. But yeah, I mean, I've never written for TV, so I couldn't say for sure. But that's definitely the impression that I get. I mean, we pretty much just hung out for a weekend and hashed out our plots and the characters and everything. So we kind of came away from that, the story symposium is what we called it, sort of knowing what we were going to do for the first season.
Yeah. And it's, I think it's an interesting exercise in a very different way of being creative than I think a typical novelist approach, because and talking to many, many novelists over the course of the years that we've been doing the podcast, you know, I think most writer's experience is quite solitary, I write by myself and it's my own world and I have to get in my own head and I have to, you know, do all this. So to get with other people, not only is it very different, I suspect that it would be very freeing. What was your experience in terms of like your own solo writing versus writing in a group like that?
Well, I loved the experience of writing in a group because, I mean, I agree, writing is lonely and it can get, it's not boring isn't the word, but it can get sort of tedious and you feel like you're in your own head all of the time. And when you try to go, like you're working on a novel and I say, I'm going to go tell my friend about this novel and I can sit there and talk about it and I'm obviously boring them because telling somebody about your story is not the same as actually reading it. And it was really, really fun to be able to talk to other people about the story that we're working on and to share ideas and to kind of have this sort of organic process in this. I don't know. It was a really interesting approach. And it's like you're basically taking the writing process, the novel writing process, and you're adding in other people. And it just makes it fun. It makes it a group activity rather than a solo activity. And I really enjoyed that aspect of it a lot.
I want to get more into that later. It reminded me of an experience I had at a con quite a few years ago now, at least 5 years ago. And it was Paolo Bacigalupi, and I think that's how you pronounce his name. And he and I and another one of my friends, we were kind of chatting in the lobby of this hotel. And someone came up, an aspiring author came up to him and was telling him about their novel and went into great lengths of explaining the faster than light travel and the whole system. And Paolo, like, this is, oh, it, like, he is a really good person because, you know, she, like, this person, like, really, like, dominated their time, like, really, like, kind of glommed onto him, and he was very polite, and he listened the whole time, and I'm like, oh, my God, she's going to get into every aspect of everything in her book, and he's just sitting there listening to it. I felt, you know, anyway, it was a funny interaction, but I definitely want to get into that more because I think there are, depending on the medium in which you make things, whether it's a writer or a musician or a visual artist, you know, sometimes there's solitary things, sometimes there's group things, and I think one can learn from the other to enrich it. But before we get further into that, I do want to get into our picks. And before we get into our picks, I do want to mention to our listeners, if you enjoy the program and you'd like to support us, we do have a Patreon page. It's at patreon.com/functionalnerds. And if you dig what we do, you can join the over 40 people that already back us. You can do $1 a month, and that's, we do 4 episodes a month, so it's a quarter a show if you like that. And if you get value out of hearing interviews with cool people like Cassandra here and want to support the show, $1 a month's great, or as Patrick likes to put it, you can do $5 a month or 10. As you go up the levels, like a lot of Patreons, you get extra perks. So
and actually, one of the perks that we just added, we're like $140 now, right? Mm-hmm. We've added one. If we get to 150, John will come to your house and teach your child how to play the recorder.
It's true. I can do it. I do it every day at my day job. Yes. So if you like those things, you can sort of be in on the video interview where you can kind of watch us as we're doing it live. There would be Patreon first episodes. So lots of cool stuff, though. So if you're interested in that and want to back the show, check us out at patreon.com/functionalnerds. But let us get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Cassandra, why don't you go first?
All right. So mine is a comic book, and I'm woefully behind on my comic book reading, so I don't think I've read the most recent issue, but it's called The Vision. It's by Tom King, or it's written by Tom King. The artist is Gabriel Hernandez-Walta. And it is, of course, a comic book about The Vision, who was the nice android in Age of Ultron. But it's one of those Marvel books that feels more like an indie comic than a traditional superhero comic. The most recent one that everybody talked about was the Matt Fraction Hawkeye. And so you have the character of The Vision, and he has created a family to try to have a normal life. And so rather than superhero shenanigans, you have this very creepy sort of robots in suburbia, and the way humans are interacting with them and distrust them, and the way that these robots, I mean, they're not really right. Marvel has some term for the Vision, and I don't remember what it is, but these robots and how they're interacting with them and how they're so much more powerful than the people in their neighborhood and the people the kids are going to school with. So what you have is this incredibly creepy and unsettling comic, and it makes use of a third person omniscient narrator to let you know that something terrible is going to happen. So there's this foreshadowing that this sort of perfect suburban life is going to all fall apart. Which is really, really cool. And it makes great use of the uncanny valley, in that, like, all of the family that the Vision created, they all have these cutesy V names. Like, his wife is Virginia, and his daughter is Viv, his son is Vin. And so it's like Virginia Vision, and I guess he's Vision Vision, or the Vision Vision. And so it's like he doesn't quite understand what it means to be human and to have a family, and that really comes across in the story.
And I take it this is like the new,
yeah, Marvel? Yeah.
Because in
yeah,
the this, past yeah. he had the twins with the Scarlet Witch,
right? Yeah. So he's like that all that has been erased. Right. He's had his memory wiped, and so he's like kind of trying to recreate it. So this is it. Just started. I think it's on like the 5th issue right now. So
I still have cool. Vision and the Scarlet Witch 1 through 13 or whatever it was.
Oh, they had their own series. That's just the two of them for a while.
Yeah, they had a little mini series with the where they had the kids and stuff. Yeah,
yeah. I you know, as we've spoke about before, I'm you know, I went through that period of collecting comics for a while, and you can just keep going. They really suck you in to the point where you're like, I'm buying like 20 books a month.
Oh,
and
then, that's so cute.
Yeah. And so you just sort of either just commit to it or you get out of it. And unfortunately I got out of it. So my comics reading is all graphic novels when they get collected into it, which I realize I'm really limiting what I can do, because not everything gets to graphic novel. As we spoke about with our friend John Bivens, you know, it's they need, as he put it, the sales of the floppies need to be a certain amount before they're even consider putting it into a graphic novel. But, you know, so it's a thing. But anyway, but that's very cool. I would be very curious to check that out, especially consider now Vision's going to be in Civil War coming up, right?
Like,
yeah.
And Scarlet Witch. So I wonder if they play anything with that.
I think they're on opposite sides.
Yeah, that is interesting. I wonder if they'll give a nice couple little nods to comic fans with their interactions. Who knows? But that'll be very cool. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
Well, to keep the comic book theme going, I'm very excited. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm extremely excited for World's Finest, which is the crossover between Supergirl and The Flash, which is going to be happening on CBS, I believe, on actually March 23rd. Or possibly the next week. But anyway, it's they've already established in The Flash that there's a multiverse, right? Mm-hmm. They've got, you know, Earth Zero, Earth Two, and all this kind of stuff. And on one of his trips through sort of the, I don't know what they're calling it, the Speed Force, or how they're doing it right now in The Flash. But on his trip through, they actually showed Supergirl. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because Jay Garrick told him, don't pay attention to anything you see. Just keep running. You know, don't get distracted. Don't get distracted. Just keep running. And as he's running through, you see Supergirl. So that was a nice little foreshadowing thing that they did, where, you know, they kind of let you know that something was going to happen. But as you know, in the Arrowverse, there's no Kryptonians. they've kind of alluded to things like Gotham City and Metropolis and stuff like that, but they haven't come out and blatantly said, you know, they also mentioned Ferris Air. So we know that it's possible that the Green Lantern Corps could exist in that universe. And there's a lot of fan speculation that John Diggle is actually going to become the Green Lantern, but that's a whole other fan thing. Anyway, they're saying that Barry is going to be running through the Speed Force. Something's going to happen. He's going to actually break through barriers between universes and end up in the Supergirl universe. And hilarity ensues. So I'm very, very excited to see that, because they did such a good job with the Flash of Two Worlds with Jay and Barry. And now they're going to do the World's Finest thing with Supergirl and him. And they've already been doing a lot of Superman stories with Supergirl. So it'll be – I'm just interested. I love the two shows. They're very different in tone from Arrow. They're more upbeat. And so I'm just excited for it.
Yeah, I don't watch Supergirl because Supergirl is not on Hulu, and I don't have cable, so I'd have to buy them. So I'm just going to wait till they come on Netflix or whatever they come on. But all the CW shows – on Hulu, and I watch all of them. I watch Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow and Flash and all that. And I had to, I don't know if I spoke about this last time, but I gave in, Patrick, and with Hulu, I went up to the commercial free plan. Because I was watching so much.
Still have commercials?
Only, there's literally like five shows out of everything that's on there. And one of them is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. What they do is, because of the rights, I guess, that they signed before they did the commercial free plan, they show one 30-second ad before the show starts and one at the very end. So it's really not a big deal. But it was getting crazy because it was just like – I was watching all those shows and it's like, I'm wasting, you know, $4 a month. That's worth my time. Well, that's worth my time not to like have to sit through all that, you know.
And you know, it's interesting because I have the Hopper still from Dish and I can skip commercials on network programming except for CBS. CBS is the one that fought them hard and won't let them do it.
Yeah. Interesting. We're living in interesting times with TV. So my pick is going to kind of lead us back to what we were talking about at the beginning with sort of the group collaboration. And that is a book called Creativity, Inc. Overcoming the Unseen Forces That Stand in the Way of True Inspiration. And that is by Ed Catmull. And if that name sounds familiar, he is one of the founders of Pixar. So it is basically a book about what they do at Pixar and Pixar's whole history, and particularly Ed Catmull's history and how he got started and got degrees in computer science, you know, when computers took up, you know, entire floors of buildings, and how it was always his dream to do a feature length computer animated movie. And obviously he did it with Toy Story, and just talking about their creative process and how they do things and how they're always setting up systems so that they can continue to put out such a high quality product. And I think it's universally accepted that, you know, pretty much everything Pixar puts out is of a seriously high quality. And a lot of that has to do with Ed Catmull and John Lasseter and a lot of the early people at Pixar. And then they went over, and when Disney bought them, they became the head of Disney animation too. And so if you notice, those Disney movies got a heck of a lot better after they took over too. So it's a lot of the same people. And they talk about sort of the writer's room and the writer's process and being open to it. And it's a good read. If you're a creative type of person, it's kind of aimed as like a business book too, how to manage. So there's a little bit of that in there too. But for the most part, it's a nice insight into Pixar. And for me, being the father of a 9-year-old son who has seen pretty much all the Pixar stuff at this point, and I went to go see all the Pixar stuff before, long before I even had kids, so as I think a lot of people do, it's interesting to hear some of the stories behind it, how there were really kind of disasters that were solved. There's a great little anecdote about how when they were making Toy Story 2, apparently was a disaster the whole way through, and it came out great in the end, but it was, they had a like fire, like who they were getting to direct it and start all over again. And then at one point they had like a Linux command where they erased the whole movie in progress, like nice. 2 years worth of work were just erased, and it took them a while to find it back. It's a lot of really interesting anecdotes if it turns out. So that is my pick. So it's by Ed Catmull, Creativity Inc. It's a picture of Buzz Lightyear like conducting on the cover. You've probably seen it. It was out a year ago, and I remember seeing a lot about it. So that is my pick this
week. Now, John, before you go down the road of where you're going to go and asking Cassandra all kinds of cool questions, she and I have a very long history.
Oh, let's hear it.
In that we met at Worldcon. Mm-hmm. And we had a conversation there, and so I have to know, I have to get a conclusion to the conversation. Did you enjoy Deadpool?
I did. I really liked it.
Yeah. Did it live up to your what your expectations were?
Yeah, it totally did. I was really worried that it would be a little too, I guess, dude bro, and it was kind of, but it also like was sort of sweet. I was afraid it would be mean, like just really kind of, I don't know how to describe it, but there was a sweetness to it and to the way into Deadpool's interactions with the characters. I mean, he's being a jerk, but he's like, it's like sort of, I don't know, a thoughtful jerk. I don't know how to describe it. But I really enjoyed it. I really loved his relationship with Vanessa, and yeah, I loved that Blind Owl was in it. She's one of my favorite characters.
Did you like how he just continued to make Colossus puke?
Yeah. Yes, that was a nice touch. And I loved the Negasonic Teenage Warhead character and her interactions with him, and how she was just like too cool for him. Yep. That was great. That was awesome.
I think actually one of my favorite moments in that movie was when Colossus is just dragging him along, and he's like, I'm going to take you to Professor X. And he's like, which one? McAvoy? Stewart? All these timeline changes, they're so confusing.
I find it really interesting that this is, you know, Ryan Reynolds, you know, final, like, I mean, obviously he's been making movies for many years, but in a lot of ways you can kind of consider this like his big breakthrough, because I think, and I was a person who believed that too, even when I remember watching him on that, was it Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place?
Oh, yeah.
That Friday night sitcom that he got a start on. And I remember even then people are like, this guy is going to be huge. Like he's really funny and he's charming and he's good looking. And I remember thinking like, oh yeah, he's totally going to be huge. And he's had so many sort of attempts at it. And it's, I mean, I'm sure if you go through his boxes, I'm sure he's had some successes along the way, but obviously we see Green Lantern and we see, you know, all of these kind of things that didn't work out the way that they wanted. And I find it interesting that the one, and I obviously this was like a passion project for him that he had been trying to get off the ground. But I think it's funny that this super good looking guy, that his big breakthrough is the one where he's deformed, his face is deformed, he's wearing a mask through the whole movie. And well, it's like the big selling point of him is sort of negated.
So, and the funny thing is, John, it's like, especially with me, I don't hold Green Lantern against him at all the way I hold Daredevil against Affleck. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, as far as I'm concerned, Batman versus Superman is a pile of steaming shit. I haven't even seen it yet, but it's like, as soon as they told me Affleck was going to be in it, I'm like, oh, this is not going to be good. And there's all these people who are defending him and saying, no, it's going to be great. You know, he's so good in it and blah, 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 blah. They've already set such a low expectation for me. But with Ryan Reynolds, I don't know. It's like, you watch – Hal Jordan is not a wisecracking character.
Yeah.
He's not. Mm-hmm. You know, if they wanted to have a wisecracking Green Lantern, they should have made a Guy Gardner movie.
Yeah.
And they didn't, you know? So it's like, I don't know. For some reason, I don't hold it against him. But I loved that how he did this movie and how he portrayed the character. And I know a lot of what I read online said that Blade Trinity was his audition for this movie. Years and That's years right, ago. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Anyway, I knew that Cassandra was a huge Deadpool fan and was really looking forward to that movie. So I just had to ask her that before you started going down the road of her books.
Yeah. No. Well, I want to get back into what we were talking about in terms of the Witch Came from the Cold, but sort of the writer's room mentality. Now, when you're doing your own novels, is it all a solo effort? Do you do any kind of, you know, sort of meeting up with people who you trust and kind of running ideas by them? Like, do you get early feedback on your novel ideas from the people around you?
Not really, because mm-hmm. I found that when I do that, a lot of times it can kind of almost kill the desire to write, because I feel like I've told the story, and it can make me kind of it could also make me anxious in terms of the feedback I get, because a lot of times it's hard to sort of explain what I'm really thinking. And then when people give me feedback, it's almost like they're not really seeing the story I want to tell. So their feedback doesn't really work. And so I really dislike even taking novels into kind of critique groups piece by piece, for that reason, because they're not seeing the whole story. They're not kind of seeing how everything fits together. So like early feedback, I really don't do. I really don't even outline that much, although I'm thinking about changing that.
Scrivener.
Yeah, I actually use Scrivener, but I still don't really outline. You have a lot of feedback in the revision step. I like to show my like a full completed novel to people and get feedback on that in that sense. But early on, I really don't do a whole lot of it.
It's a tough balance, and I go back and forth on it myself. You know, being a composer and a songwriter, because depending on the ideas that I'm having, I do tend to sort of plan things out. And I know, you know, pretty close. I have a vision for what I want something to sound like at the end. So if you're just sort of explaining it to somebody, I remember one time I had this one song and I eventually there was a horn section on it. And I remember telling my wife about it. She's like, a horn section on that? Like, I don't get that at all. Like, why would you do that? And I'm like, nah, it's going to work. It's going to be good. And then when I completed it and had it all mixed and everything, she's like, oh, yeah, I hear it now. It's kind of like a Beatles horn section. I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, just like, but like Earth, Wind, and Fire horns in this. And like, yeah, if that's what you – so – yeah, I struggle with that sometimes.
I took a ride. I didn't know what I was.
Yeah, it was more like that kind of horns. But the point is that I struggle with it, because in terms of feedback from people, because I feel like on one hand, yeah, don't be so closed off, and you know, feedback from people can be helpful. And maybe you're just being too sensitive, because I think that's a problem that probably many artistic people have, is that you're afraid that someone's going to shoot your idea down. You're like, yeah, but that's not it yet. You don't understand.
Yeah, as soon as you put it out there, John, as soon as you put it out there, it's like people start criticizing it immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and I know there's, you know, and Patrick, I know that you are You've had a lot of very positive experiences with the various writers groups that you've been in. And I know that's because you've put a lot of effort into finding good groups and cultivating a good group. Because as we know, and we've talked about before, there are groups that are not helpful that mm-hmm. can actually be quite harmful.
Yes.
So Cassandra, from your point of view, do you do any writers groups, or have you done any writers group kind of things?
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm in a writers group now and I really enjoy it. I have sort of a complicated relationship with writers groups and novels. I think mm-hmm. they're fantastic for short fiction. Because you can kind of look at the piece in total, right. Mm-hmm. And kind of give feedback on the whole story. I have a hard time bringing in pieces of a novel and getting feedback. And it's not that my critique group is giving me bad feedback, it's that they're not seeing the whole novel.
Correct.
And so they're seeing, they see what they've read and they're giving me feedback based on what they've read. And I'm kind of having to say, well, actually you're going to find out this other thing later on. And so this doesn't really make sense. I've kind of learned that I'm not crazy about bringing novels into critique groups, but I do love bringing short fiction. And it's kind of like what I was talking about earlier. What I love most about critique groups is the sociability of them, is a chance to kind of get with other writers and to talk about writing and kind of not be in your own head for a little bit, for 2 hours. So it's just like I've learned that I kind of prefer to bring short fiction. And that's something even when I was in grad school, I have a graduate degree in creative writing. And I remember one of my professors saying that we don't tend to focus on writing in these graduate programs because there's really no great way to workshop a whole novel in the sort of workshop method that graduate programs use, which is pretty much what critique groups use.
And so we've done it, and we've done it for years. And what I always talk about is there's an artifact from mm-hmm. submitting a novel that way. And mm-hmm. number one, we ask that you have a finished draft mm-hmm. before you start submitting, and that you don't start making wholesale changes, in the middle of it. Like suddenly, oh, I've decided that this character is now a doctor. And, that kind of wipes it out. But one of their problems is, a lot of people don't remember 6 months later what they read in the first section. So you talk about me cultivating good people in my groups, and I do that. And I also co-founded this group with JT that I'm in right now. And one of the things that we've just launched is essentially once a year, you can carve out a specific month and say, I'm going to submit my novel that month. And you can't submit anything the month before or the month after. And we have our normal meeting. And then after our normal meeting, you have to host us somewhere and feed us. And then we sit down and talk about your novel all in one go. Mm-hmm. And we're going to try that for the first time here in April. Someone has actually claimed April. So they're hosting us and we're reading their novel. And it's going to be the first time that we've ever done this, because we recognize that there is weirdness with trying to put novels through critique groups. So this is our solution.
And I think that's actually a great idea. I've been playing around with ideas like that. I like the idea that the person being critiqued has to feed everybody.
Yes.
That's a nice sort of – because it is a big time investment to read a novel and critique a novel, and that's a good kind of payment for it.
Yep. And so we meet usually 1 to 4. So it's about dinner time when we're done, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's why we said you have to host us somewhere. We're going to leave the library where we meet, and we're going to go somewhere else, and we're going to relax, and we're going to talk about your novel. And this particular person said, how about this? How about we have the entire meeting at my house, and I'll feed you and get you drinks and all kinds of stuff. And, and we're like, yeah, that works. That's awesome. So this is our beta. This is our first test.
I think that's an awesome idea. Yeah. It's surprising like how willing you are to do things if there's like a good meal and
exactly.
beverages involved.
Yes.
It really, and company. I don't know if, I mean, you were kind of alluding to it before, just Cassandra, about being around people. I know as I get older, the time to have interaction with friends or with just interesting people that aren't the people you work with or your immediate family, it's harder and harder to have those times. You really have to go out there and seek it out and make it happen. So I think, what you're talking about, Patrick, is like, I'm sure most people in your group are just like, ooh, I'll be around my writer friends.
And we've also started going out after.
Yeah.
So we meet in Castle Rock. We meet in the old downtown kind of area, and it's a really neat area. There's lots of little hole in the wall places, and we've started now after the meeting. You know, we go and we kind of decompress and we just chat. And we went to a beer garden, John. You would have loved it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's lots in Colorado. There's lots of now local Colorado breweries and IPAs and stuff like that. And there's tons of places that you can get them. So we're just kind of going, hanging out, getting some food, relaxing and talking after our critique group.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Again, it's a social thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, you know, I know. Yeah, we're running almost out of time. So we talked a little bit about The Witch Who Came from the Cold, but you have a recent book out through Saga called Our Lady of the Ice, and maybe you can tell our listeners a little something about that one before we have to go.
Yeah, I actually had we called it a launch party, but it was really more like a 6-month celebration event. I had it last night with the writers group that I'm involved with. It's a science fiction novel about a domed city in Antarctica. And it kind of features this conflict with the robots and the androids that sort of help run the city and used to run an old amusement park that was the city was sort of built around. And then there's some gangsters that are vying for control of the city. There's politicians who are vying for control of the city. And so it's this sort of three-way sort of battle that's happening. It's very noirish. It's kind of got this sort of retro 60s sort of retro futuristic thing. And I actually based it on Epcot, which is a really cool thing that Walt Disney came up with, where, you know, you have sort of the park in the center and then there's a city around it and people drive in. And so I was really interested in that idea. I wanted to write a story about it. And so I was really interested in that kind of, like I said, retrofuturism aspect as well. And then the main character is a female PI, private investigator. So it has that sort of 1940s noir thing going on at the same time. So it sort of just mashed a whole bunch of things that I thought were cool into one book.
Awesome. Saga's doing some really good stuff these days. I think they're you know, they're a new press, and I think they're pointing out a lot of cool things. So that is awesome. Okay, so as we go, I want to mention that Cassandra's website is Cassandra Rose Clark with an E at the end, .com. So CassandraRoseClark.com. And on Twitter, she is mitochondrial, at mitochondrial. So I'm assuming you were early to Twitter then.
Yes.
Okay. and Twitter's about to turn 10.
Oh, wow. Oh. Yeah, that's right. What is it? Yeah, so it's 2007 when it started? Or? Yeah, okay. That's because I think I was 2008 when I got on, I believe.
I think I was 2009.
Okay.
2009. I knew about it right when I had a professor who told us about it, thought it was the coolest thing. I didn't sign up for it right away.
Like that close to 3,000 followers.
Ooh, very good. Yeah. So I know, because if you're early on Twitter, a lot of times your handle is, you know, not your name. And then I think people are like, oh, I should just probably have my name. That would probably make the most sense. And
you can
usually tell by that. But very cool. Or you could be like one of those people, the real power move is to just have your first name, like Veronica Belmont has at Veronica. Like that's the power move when you just have your at Cassandra or.
Yeah.
You know, so obviously you have all your stuff that's out. Will you be making any con appearances anytime soon?
I will be at the local Texas convention, Armadillo Con, which is in the summer in Austin. I'm probably not going to be doing Worldcon because I want to save my money for Helsinki. Mm. So I'm planning on being that 2 years from now. I'm not doing a whole lot of convention. I'll also be at Comic Palooza, which is the big Comic Con in Houston.
So sweet.
Doing local stuff.
I know our friend John DiNardo over at SF Signal, I know he usually goes to Armadillo Con. And
so does Stina.
Stina does too, right? So hopefully you guys can hook up there because that's some good people there. I don't know. Do you know John DiNardo from SF Signal?
Yes, I do. I actually met him at ArmadilloCon last year.
Oh, wow. Well, very good. So, yeah, if you're in the area, you should definitely go to those cons and say hi to Cassandra. And, you know, I just realized, you know, I took my notes for our interview. We can't talk about it now because we don't have time, but we have to get you back on to talk about Clone Wars because I'm a huge fan of Clone Wars and Star Wars in general. And we'll have to, you know, Patrick, we got down the Deadpool hole, and that's fine too. But we'll have to get you back on to talk about Clone Wars and Star Wars.
I would be happy to do that. I'm obsessed with Star Wars right now. So
yeah, me too. So we'll have to talk about that again soon. All right. So for us, once again, if you dig the show, you get value out of the show, go over to functionalnerds.com. Oh, sorry, go to patreon.com/functionalnerds and consider becoming one of our backers over there. Patrick, anything you'd like to tell people about?
Nope.
All right. So much. All right, everybody. Have a great week, and we will see you next time.
Sunsmoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?